Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Marty Jo Link. She joins us by telephone from Northern Michigan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Marty, you have just published a memoir, and I don't know how many radio interviews you've done for this, but I'm wondering, am I allowed to say the full title on the radio?
I hope so. I think you are.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay, the title of Marty Jo's book is Bootstrapper, From Broke to Badass on a Northern Michigan Farm.
Yes.
Now, that's a title. It's your memoir. What made you decide to write it?
Well, I was previously pretty embroiled in writing true crime books. I've always been a nonfiction writer, and I had worked as a journalist. So the idea of kind of doing a 180 and using the word I and turning that reporter's notebook onto myself hadn't really occurred to me until I started writing some essays about my sons and about my life and that one pivotal year. And then when I started reading other people's memoirs, I thought, you know, I think I might have a story that I'd like to tell. So it was by degrees, I think, that it occurred to me.
Well, as the book begins, you're drinking beer and you're going through quite a bit of turmoil because you're getting ready to go through a divorce.
Yeah.
And the guy you were married to, he goes by Mr. Wonderful in every reference that you make to him. I'm wondering, has Mr. Wonderful read your book?
You know, I don't really know. We still communicate about our boys, but we don't talk about much else. And he's pretty much of a mystery and a thriller reader, so I'm not sure if he's read it or not.
Okay, well, we're immediately struck by the fact that this is one of those divorces where things are going to be complicated, because when he leaves the house, he goes across the road. You're out in the country. He goes across the road and rents a house right across the way from you, and that seems like a complication to those of us who are reading it.
I think it was a complication. I was pretty naive at the time, and it was his idea. And when he suggested it, I thought, well, it would be, we both agreed it'd be easier for the kids. It was traumatic enough to end a 19-year marriage. So when he said that he was willing to move out, I wasn't really that concerned about the location.
Mm-hmm.
But it was complicated. It's difficult to get on with your life when your ex-spouse is living right across the street.
So you have these three sons together, and they are so much a part of this story. This is really an inspiring story. A lot of the things that you go through, I think, will resonate with a lot of readers, because we're all going to be saying, you know, that happened to my family. That happened to my mother.
Mm-hmm. I wanted readers to know what heroes my sons are. And in my mind, they are the heroes of the story, not me. Although they were young when I started writing about them. And in the story, they're 7 and 12 and 15. So I asked them when I sat down to put this book together, I said, you know, I have an opportunity to write about our lives. How do you boys feel about it? And all three of them said, do it, Mom. Go ahead and do it. And then my oldest said, but I can't imagine who would want to read about us. So they're not only heroes, but they're pretty humble too. But they did everything I asked of them and more. And although all the divorce literature tells you not to lean too hard on your children, I did the exact opposite. I really leaned on them, and they were there. They were there that year for me.
And you live out in the country. You live up in northern Michigan near Traverse City, is that right?
I do, yeah. I live about 8 miles south of town.
And it sounds like you're on a country road. I think I just heard a vehicle go by.
Probably, yeah. I am on a country road.
Uh-huh.
I still live on the Big Valley, the scene where the book takes place.
And you're the Barbara Stanwyck of the ranch.
I did identify with her, yes.
For those of us of a certain age, the Big Valley was a TV show back in, what, the 60s?
Right, yeah, the late 60s, and it was Barbara Stanwyck and her three sons. There was Linda Evans, and I don't have a daughter. I don't have a Linda Evans, but I still really identified with Barbara. She was so tough in that TV show, and she did, you know, she rounded up the cattle, and she rode horses, and she chased people off of her property, and so I really identified with her.
On the cover, you've got this picture of an axe, and the axe is really representative of a lot of things, isn't it?
I think it is, and I was so pleased when the publisher sent me their mock-up of the cover, because when you write a story from a woman's perspective, and it's about motherhood, and it's about raising children, and it's about growing vegetables and living outdoors, you're not really sure what the publisher is going to put on the cover. It could be flowers. It could be smiley faces. It could be anything like that. And when the email came through with an axe on the cover, I thought, you know what? They really get it. They really understand my story. I was thrilled to see that axe.
We have so many people going through tough economic times, dislocations of various sorts. Your divorce put you in a situation where you really had a tough time financially, and we go through all this with you as readers, and this is really just a hairy experience to witness what you went through.
Right, and it did seem to be one thing after another after another. It just came in waves, and looking back on it, if I had known what all we were going to face, I'm not sure that I would have signed up for that. I was pretty stubborn, and I was pretty resolute in that my children were going to be raised in a rural lifestyle, and we were going to stay on the Big Valley, and I wasn't willing to give up my home. But I didn't know what was to come when I made that promise to myself, and we did get hit with an awful lot that year. And, you know, looking back on it, I'm not sure that we necessarily overcame all of those challenges. In a way, I think we just outlasted them. You know, we managed to stave off despair and the bank until I was able to get on my feet financially. And we did it in some pretty creative ways.
And when the separation happens, this puts a halt to a remodeling project that you were going through. It just completely went on hold, and you had all these unfinished things going on in the house, and here's this guy who was doing the remodeling, and he's just kind of out there orbiting around at the far periphery of your universe.
Right. Yeah, both my romantic life and remodeling my house were pretty low on the priority list at that time.
And I'm not going to give any spoilers, Marty.
Okay.
So, the book is Bootstrapper, From Broke to Badass on a Northern Michigan Farm. Marty Jo Link wrote it, and we hear references throughout the book to your work that you're doing. You refer to these writing projects. I just heard you mention that you write true crime. Is this the kind of stuff that you were working on or trying to work on while this was going on?
I was. I was doing quite a bit of freelance work, just assigned. I would take whatever was assigned along with editing other people's work. But then I had some ideas for, I used to be a police reporter for a daily newspaper, and so I had some ideas for cases that I thought were worthy of a book. And I was in the early stages of working on the first one. In 2008, I wrote a book called When Evil Came to Goodheart, and it's about an entire family that was killed in their summer cabin not too far from where I live. And even today, it's a 45-year-old case, and even today it's unsolved. Mm. So I got to use some of those reporter skills in a longer narrative form. And I was doing some of that during that bootstrapper year.
And meanwhile, you're looking at the bills. You're looking at the mortgage payment, the gas payment, all the expenses, the property taxes, the food bills, and you're finding all these ways to save. You're going to the thrift store to buy clothes for your kids. You're turning the heat way down. You figure out, oh, look, we've got this giant fireplace. Maybe we should be burning firewood. And you go out and you start chopping down wood. And your thriftiness and sense of industry, I think, is really inspirational.
Well, I've heard readers say that it reminded them of stories from their grandparents. And I suppose it does harken back to an earlier time when people had to do that. And you know, in a lot of ways, I think our society is far removed from actual physical labor. And that year, we became intimately reacquainted with physical labor as far as using it to heat our house, to grow our food, to raise animals. We worked hard emotionally, but we worked hard physically. And I think in certain ways, in our modern society, we've lost the ability to do that, or we don't think that we can do that anymore, but we can.
Your three sons are so much a part of this story. Why don't you tell our listeners about them? Tell us about these guys.
Sure. Well, they are not only the heroes of the story, they are the heroes of my life. I have three sons. Owen is my oldest, and in the story, he's 15, a burgeoning musician, and he spends a lot of time looking after me, but also out playing with his rock band. And that year, his band started getting paying jobs. And so even though I think by the time he had the jobs, he was 16, some of the places that he played, he had to go in the back door because he wasn't 21. Hmm. So he's probably the ambitious one of the trio. And then my middle son is Luke. He was 12, the bootstrapper year, and he's the worker. He's the one who's really interested in the farm, interested in the animals, knows how to grow a garden, and doesn't mind work for work's sake. He was a huge help that year, and he has a kind of an innate kindness too. I think possibly that because of his spot in his siblings. And then my youngest is Will, and he was 7, going on 8 during the bootstrapper year. And he just, you know, he was just a little kid. He wanted to be with his mom, and he wanted to be with his brothers, and he kind of still possessed that childlike wonder. He still believed in Santa Claus. Hmm. So the three of them, in their own ways, were very innocent, I think, that year. And I tried to shield them from adult problems. And I think with some success, but not always successful in that endeavor.
And the bootstrapper year was 2005. So does that mean your oldest has left the nest?
He has. My oldest is 23 now, and he moved to Chicago, and he just got a job. He still plays music. His band moved to Chicago, and he moved with them. He left college to do that. He still plays music there, and now he's a chef at a really nice restaurant. Oh. Never had any culinary training, but boy, does he know a lot about where food comes from. And then Luke, my middle one, is he's a college student, and my younger one is in high school.
What do they think about Mom's book now that it's out?
They've all read it, and they've, in their own ways, they've said to me, you know, Mom, we remember all of those things happening, but we didn't know that you were afraid or that you were worried or that we might lose the house, or we just thought that was our life. We didn't understand that danger was at the door. And so that, you know, that's the best thing that they could say, that in a way I did shield them from some of that stuff.
Well, it's just a wonderful, inspiring story, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that it has a happy ending. And as we get to that ending, we go through the turmoil and the trials that you experience. Like the day that you get your divorce finalized, that's an amazing day. And then we have all these experiences, which a lot of them are humorous, where you're trying to get these animals. And I think the funniest parts of the book for me involve chickens.
Right.
I was laughing at these parts with the chickens in them.
Right. You know, and I guess that might be one thing I would like readers to know, is that difficulty can also be funny. It's not all gloom and doom. I think we got through by all four of us have a pretty good sense of humor, and I think that's what got us through. And some of those observations, you're right, are just plain funny. The chickens certainly did not follow the directions that I gave them, or certainly didn't follow my plan. I had this grand scheme that we were going to raise both meat and eggs, and it pretty much went off the rail pretty quickly.
The part where you talk about the rooster that you named Pecker is just hilarious.
Right, and my son didn't quite understand that that word had two meanings when it came to a rooster.
Oh, what a wonderful, amusing section. And then you get all these chickens, and you get some of them because you want eggs, and you get some of them because you want to have some chicken in your freezer. And just observing as a third party the dominance issues and the things going on with these chickens, and then what ultimately becomes of some of them. Oh, my. What? And we feel the same thing, I think, a lot of us as readers, in that you've got these animals and you're like, okay, well, now what's she going to do when she gets to the point where she has to decide to make the transition from the chicken coop to the freezer? Now, how does that happen? A lot of us get a little squeamish when we think about that. It's one thing to go in a supermarket and see the chicken sitting there, and it doesn't really look like a chicken.
Right. Yeah, never again will I look at a chicken in a supermarket quite the same way. The egg plan went perfectly. I mean, we had as many eggs as we needed. We could give them away to friends. I think we might have even sold some of them, and the eggs were delicious. But as far as getting a live chicken into a bag in your freezer, that didn't quite go as planned. I had always thought that I could hire someone to do that for me. And unbeknownst to me, after I got the chickens that we raised for meat, and boy, did they ever grow, just huger and huger and huger. Michigan passed a law that said people can't come to your farm anymore and kill your livestock, that you have to take them to a USDA-inspected plant. And the closest one to me was in Grand Rapids, which is a 2.5-hour drive. So that made it, really impossible. So I either had to do it myself or give them away or do something else. So it was, it was an ethical as well as a logistical nightmare.
And then you have the one son who's a vegetarian who is always throwing in those little comments. And I liked his opinion of Pecker.
Right. Yeah, he was no longer, after Pecker attacked them so many times, he was no longer in Pecker's corner anymore.
The book is Bootstrapper. Marty Jo Link wrote it. This is also a bit of a story about a spiritual quest. You're taking the boys to different churches. You're thinking about spirituality when you have the time.
And right.
I think the thing that eventually dawns on you, and I think it's something that maybe dawns on some of us some of the time, is the need to actually be present, to be there now,
right,
this minute.
Right.
Yeah.
And also the requirement that we have, just as human beings, to feel a sense of gratitude wherever we are in our life, whether we're facing a hardship or things are going well, just to feel, to be in the present and to feel a sense of gratitude for that present moment instead of always asking for things. And it took me quite a while to come to that point, and I still have difficulty with it, but I try to stay there. I try to remember that. And sometimes it takes the hard things to teach us those lessons.
Well, I'm feeling a sense of gratitude that you're the one that brought that up, because I consider that to be the ultimate spoiler. I'm just kidding.
I know.
The book is Bootstrapper, and we're grateful that Marty Jo Link was willing to be on the program today. And we were chatting, and you mentioned, just in passing, that you kind of got started on this book here in Yellow Springs, Ohio. Tell us how that happened.
I did. I had written a part of the chicken section I had written as a personal essay, and I was just experimenting about writing about my life, and I think it was in 2006 or 2007, and I sent that off to a contest, and the winner of that contest got to spend a week at the Antioch Writers Workshop right there in Yellow Springs, and I won. And I can't tell you what a gift that was. So I got to come to Yellow Springs, and I remember I borrowed my parents' car because my old van probably wouldn't have made the trip from northern Michigan. And I drove to Yellow Springs, and I got an entire week to just work on writing and to meet other writers and to meet the great instructors there. And it was such a gift. And really, that's where I started writing Bootstrapper. And I have such fond memories of my Yellow Springs week.
The book is Bootstrapper. It's a memoir by Marty Jo Link, and the subtitle is From Broke to Badass on a Northern Michigan Farm. And how's the garden? I imagine it's really starting to get going right about now.
The garden is great. As a matter of fact, I was out there weeding this morning and planting some more carrots before I talked to you. And I don't have livestock anymore. I have just one. I'm down to one dog. But I just can't get away from having a great big garden every year, and it's doing really well this year. We had a cool and wet spring, and we've had plenty of water, and today it's 78 and sunny. It's perfect. So I'm expecting to have just great things come from my garden this year.
And do you have a new neighbor?
I do have a new, well, there's a new owner, but there's nothing built there yet.
Okay, all right. So I don't want to give away anything.
Right. It still looks very much the same.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Well, that's wonderful, because as we go through this experience with you in your memoir, we're wondering, how's she going to do this? That's the big mystery of the book, is how's she going to stay where she wants to stay with her family and survive and keep going and succeed?
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, sacrifices sometimes a choice between what you can live with and what you can't. And I think that's the choice that I made. And it allowed me to stay here at the Big Valley and to raise my kids the way that I wanted to raise them.
And so how did you get the book deal for this one? How did that happen?
Well, I had talked to some agents about the true crime work that I had done, and I had an idea for a book that I thought needed a national audience. And just on a whim, when I was looking for literary agents, I attached the same essay that I used to win the Antioch Writers Workshop attendance. And so I had a couple of agents mildly interested in the true crime, and then I had a big New York literary agent call me and say, I don't publish true crime anymore. I'm not interested in representing that, but I loved your essay. And if you would like to write an entire book like that, I could sell it. So that's sort of how I got to think that our story might make an entire book, and I told her I needed to think about it, and I did, and I called her back and said, okay, well, you know, where do we start? How do I get going? And so she helped me write a proposal and attach a few chapters, and she sent it to several publishers, and it ended up going to auction, and Knopf was one of the bidders, and I was, of course, thrilled to be published by them, because they publish many of my favorite writers, like Joan Didion and Jane Smiley and people like that. So the idea that I'm published by the same publisher that publishes writers like that was just such a thrill. So it all came about rather quickly.
So it's almost like you got the book deal on spec. It was like you sold the book and then you had to go write it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, that's really neat. And I agree with you about Knopf. As far as literary imprints go, man, they put out some extraordinary books, and I'm glad that they occasionally will get a Stieg Larsson to kind of, you know, prop up the rest of the house, because
right.
they put
exactly.
out so much good stuff, and you know, a lot of it probably doesn't sell that well, but you know, it's great stuff.
Right, and they also are attached to, you know, in our age of digital and e-books, which, you know, are wonderful, but Knopf is also attached to the artful beauty of a physical object, the book as a physical object. Mm. And so they produce just really terrific covers, and their books are just beautiful. So I've been just thrilled to work with them.
I was looking at your bio, and you had a couple of other books listed there. Are those true crime?
They are, and those were published by the University of Michigan Press.
And what are those about?
Well, the first one, When Evil Came to Goodheart, is about the family that was murdered in 1968, still unsolved. And then the second one is called Isidore's Secret, and it is about a nun who disappeared from her northern Michigan convent in 1907, and they didn't find her for 12 years. And when they did find her, she was buried in the dirt-floored basement of the church. So all those years, people had been standing right on top of her were in their worship service and didn't even know that she was buried below. And it's about that book is about what happened to her and why.
So they did solve it?
They did solve it. A woman did go to prison, although she maintained her innocence, but she did go to prison. And I think that one is just a fascinating story. It takes place in a real remote part of Michigan, and there were a lot of secrets. A lot of secrets being kept for a century. Even 100 years later, people didn't really want to talk to me about it. So that's, when you get that kind of reaction, you know there's a good story there.
That's really creepy. That reminds me, a number of years ago, I was asked to go on vacation by my boss, and he took me to a very remote cabin right on the Canadian border, and there's no one else around. You can only get there by boat, and we're walking around there, and I had neglected to bring anything to read, and I said, have you got any books around here? And he says, oh, I only have one, and he showed it to me, and it was a collection of stories about serial killers.
Oh, geez.
And I just kind of looked at him like, hope I make it through this week.
Well, I'm hearing your voice, so you must have made it home safely.
Well, this is really an enjoyable book, and I'm so happy that you wrote it and that you were able to talk to our listeners about it.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
The book is Bootstrapper, From Broke to Badass on a Northern Michigan Farm. Marty Jo Link wrote it. Are you working on any more books? Anything going on book-wise right now?
Well, I have an idea. I can't really get started on it until I'm past the busiest part of my book promotion schedule, because I think it's a different brain that you use to promote a work than it is the one that you sit quietly and write one. But I have a group of women friends. There's eight of us. And we all met many years ago when we were both waitresses and bartenders, all at the same little tavern here in northern Michigan. And for 23 years, the same eight women have been going on the same weekend trip to a remote island up on the Upper Peninsula. And so they have told me that they've given me permission to tell our crazy, funny, silly story. And I'd like to write a book about our friendship and how important women's friendship is, you know, as you get older.
That sounds like fun. Well,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. The book is Bootstrapper, and we've been talking to Marty Jo Link. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Back in 2009, we had Philip Meyer on the program for his first novel. It was called American Rust. I was knocked out by that book. In fact, that was my favorite work of fiction from the year 2009, and I've been waiting for him to write another book. And finally, he has written one. And the problem with second books when the first one is so good is what I call the sophomore jinx, where you wonder, well, how can he possibly, or she possibly, top what they wrote the first time around? It was such a great book. Well, I'm happy to say that if I was to choose my favorite novel from this year, right now, today, it would be the new novel from Philip Meyer. It's called The Sun. And we'll be talking to Philip about it next week in the Book Nook. It's a Western set in Texas with a family dynasty, and it is a real page turner. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.